This is Solo Travel Talk, the Japan series. Your solo travel advisor and host is Astrid Clements.
Japan is more accessible than ever for travelers, and your solo travel advisor, Astrid Clements, spent a glorious number of weeks in the land of the rising sun. Perhaps you haven't considered Japan as a destination. Too expensive, too hard, too far, whatever your reasons. But Astrid is here to change your perception and persuade you to put Japan on your travel must-see list. I'm producer Catherine O'Brien. We're back, baby. And in addition to hearing about Japan, Astrid and I will let you know what you can expect from Solo Travel Talk over the next several weeks. Welcome back, Astrid. Japan seemed like a really remarkable destination for you. Tell us about your travels there and why we should visit Japan.
Thanks, Catherine. And I must say, it is great to be back. I really love doing the podcast, and I have missed it, but I had to take a break because I have just been super busy the first part of this year. I've been traveling, and when I travel, I just don't get on a plane and go. I do a lot of pre-trip planning, and there are lots of things that go into when I leave. I'm still married, so I have to take care of all these other things, and I have a sweet dog, etc. But I've been busy traveling. Also, I have worked on improving my brand, Astrid Solo Travel Advisor, the website, and lots of new content on it, etc., as well as my really big project that is in development and we're getting ready to launch July the 1st is the Astrid Travel Club. And this club is going to be geared to solo travelers who want to take small group trips that basically have a focus of affordable luxury. I mean, it's not going to be super expensive, but they're going to be very nice trips. The trips will usually be theme-based, or they'll have some kind of focus, like the Gardens of London. We're thinking about doing a trip during the Chelsea Flower Show next year. So there'll be these kind of trips. And we really, with the Astrid Travel Club, we want to promote mindful travel. We want the traveler to really be enriched by the trips, not just sightseeing, not just the camaraderie of meeting new friends and getting away from your routine, but to really be enriched and hopefully changed by your experience. So we put a lot of thought into this, and we're very excited. So it has taken all of my time, but I am so excited to be back. And as my husband says, I'm ready to roll, Catherine.
Everybody's going to be so excited to hear about Japan. And I know our listeners are going to be really excited to hear about the travel club. We should let everybody know we're going to be talking more about that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Now let's move on to our topic about my trip in Japan and really what I gained from that and what I want to share and my reasons for why I think everyone should visit Japan. I have to admit, Japan has not been on my list. Mm. And I find that really odd for somebody like me who is very in tune to culture. I like to experience a lot of substance. And that's what you get in Japan. Japan is marvelous. But for some reason, it was too expensive for a long time. And thank goodness our dollar has gotten so strong that it is easier for Americans to travel there. I think Japan, too, is not quite as expensive because they're wanting tourism more. Mm. Before, tourism was not focused on in Japan at all. But they are. They're getting ready to have the Olympics next year. And I'm one of these people that get inspired or something happens in my mind and I start thinking of something. And Japan just kind of popped up last year. And then I decided I wanted to go. And then all of a sudden, they named Japan as, I think it's a Travel and Leisure 2019 destination of the year. So
how fortuitous.
I was right on it. But my particular trip, what I decided after all my research is that I could spend 3.5 weeks there. I could make it on the budget that I set for myself, and I could do a variety of things and visit a variety of places that I felt like I would get a real good picture of Japan for my first time. And in the event I never get to travel back, I will really do the things that I think are pretty important. But what I did is I went to 6 different destinations, and I'm one of these people, as I've shared before on Solo Travel Talk, I do not like to just stay somewhere 2 days and leave. I like to really kind of stay there at least 5 days because I want to unpack my suitcase. I want to kind of get used to my hotel room, know my bearings, and be able to walk, you know, and come back to the hotel and feel like I'm not lost or I don't have to pack again. So I went to 6 cities, 2 modern big metropolises, Tokyo, of course, and Osaka. Then 2 cities that are really old Japan or much more traditional, which is Kyoto and Nara. Then I went to the Hakone mountain areas and visited some of the villages in that area. And that is in the mountains, very close to Tokyo, but that's where Mount Fuji is. That's been a bucket list of mine, really, since I started traveling. And then the last city was Hiroshima, and I decided to go there. I toyed with Nagasaki, but Hiroshima is where the atomic bomb was dropped. I, as an American, wanted to pay my respects, and I also wanted to see and feel or try to understand more of what actually happened when the bomb dropped and how the people had to cope with coming through this and how they've rebuilt the city. And they have a beautiful peace park, and I wanted to go there. And what happened with me is the last day, and I'm going to be talking about the gardens of Japan because they're spectacular and they're one of the must-dos that you have to do when you go to Japan. But one of the last things I did on the last day is I went to this beautiful garden in Hiroshima. You would think Hiroshima, where the bomb is and everything, they have the most spectacular Japanese garden there. And I think it's called Shinkisen. I talk about it, I think, later in the broadcast. It is unbelievable. What they tried to do with this garden is to put a little bit of all of the nature of Japan in the different areas and the different elements of Japanese gardens in this garden, and it is exquisite. So Hiroshima was the last city, and it was wonderful. So my goal really was to hit, like I said, the highlights of what Japan had to offer, from the sights to the culture, understanding what was at the root of their beliefs and their culture, as well as New Japan. Oh my gosh, Osaka and Tokyo, the two very modern metropolises that I went to, they are exciting like New York City, Tokyo especially. Osaka is a little bit smaller, but so full of energy and life and just beautiful. Then also the fabulous food. Oh, the food in Japan, you know, and I'm going to do a whole podcast on the food. The food is just fabulous. That's the best word that I can describe it. Again, the stunning gardens and the nature. I wanted to really have enough time to do enough of these activities because nature is very important to the Japanese in their life. Also, of course, going to some of the interesting temples and the shrines, understanding their spiritual beliefs. Do some shopping. That's always eats up some of my time, which is just a habit that I have, I must confess, I guess. I was very interested to get to know the Japanese people and to try to figure out what they were all about, what they valued, and why. I'm a very curious person, and I wanted to know what made them tick. How could such a small country with all of these islands, it's not just on one landmass, they have all these islands, how could it be such an advanced society and an economic powerhouse in today's world after 2 crushing defeats in the World War? I mean, these people are so wonderful. you will get that when you go. My second answer to your questions is I'm going to give you all of the reasons why I think you should visit Japan as a solo traveler, especially. First of all, it is very, very, very safe. There's virtually no crime in the big cities, etc. They're very strict about obeying laws. You'll see no evidence of guns or drugs on the street. And there's serious criminal penalties for anything like that. That in itself, for a solo traveler going to these big cities, etc., you don't feel that edge or whatever. So also one of the reasons why it's so safe, and I didn't really think about this before because I didn't know it was that safe, is the Japanese people do not want to do anything that would shame themselves individually or their family. So they just don't break the rules. They don't think like that. They're not rule breakers, or they don't want to do anything that they are very shamed about. So that's part of why it is so safe. Plus another reason, I think, and I didn't realize this till I went, it is such a homogeneous society. I'd say 99% of the people who live there are Japanese. So they just all have the same ethical and moral beliefs, and they do things a certain way. So there's just a natural flow there. There's not a lot of multiculturalism in their society. So, unfortunately, I hate to say that that is one of the reasons why I feel like it is safer. I do think that that plays into the safety factor, but it is super safe, which is great. The second is it is a country that is steeped in culture, history, and a lot of traditions. And it's so interesting because this modern, innovative country still values their traditions. This ancient culture that started here, it's kind of slowly evolved, and it's still evolving, but it does remain true to its roots. But I'll give you just a little background so you can kind of understand. Japan started totally as an agrarian type of society, which most places did. But they, because being isolated, anything that they derived from nature or that nature produced is kind of what is the real foundation of their evolution. Anything that is from the earth or the sea is part of what started Japan. And you'll see it in elements of the food. And when I talk about food and how they always try to have something from the sea and something from the earth in every meal. I mean, you know, that's sushi, fish and rice. But that's part of the consciousness of what permeates in lots of different things in their life. Then we had China coming in later after the original ancient, isolated Japan, and they brought in Buddhism, they brought in math, philosophy, architecture, art. So Japan was exposed then to the modern world. That's when all the gorgeous temples and the shrines started to be built. They did have more of what I consider moral values or codes per se, and that led to Imperial Japan, similar to China, with an emperor and building palaces and focusing on aesthetics. I mean, the beautiful costumes of the court dress and all of that led to the kimono and some of the other classic Japanese men types of dress. But the kimono today is still worn a lot in Japan. I'll never forget, I saw this one young couple. The gentleman had a baseball cap on backwards, and he was kind of hipstered out, and he was holding the hand of his girlfriend or his wife, and she had a kimono on. And you'll see in Tokyo, you'll see in Kyoto, Hiroshima, you'll see women wearing kimonos, and it doesn't look odd. it just fits in to the whole milieu, I guess you would say, of how Japan is traditional and they value these traditions. Mm. So they had that period. And then during this imperial period, you had all these clans, basically, and you had a samurai that I guess was the leader of these clans, and they were farming rice and trading rice, and rice is the big deal there. I mean, it is the absolute foundation of Japan, rice. But the samurai got so powerful, they decided that they were going to elect a shogun. And that's when the shogun period came. And the shogun is basically the king or the emperor became just kind of like a figurehead, similar to Queen Elizabeth, I guess you would say. But the bottom line is the shogun was voted on or chosen by the samurai leadership. And he was the cat daddy. He was the best of the breed, okay? And he ruled. And he ruled very wisely, to tell you the truth. That was a beautiful period. But that's when Japan really, again, became independent and their wealth rose. And that kind of led to all the outside problems in the wars. But that had a big effect on the tradition and the culture and what you'll see in the history. And it'll make more sense to you when you're there in Japan. And then afterwards, of course, you have the Meiji period and now modern Japan. When you go to Japan, you'll see elements of all of that. And if you know enough about it before you go, and you will learn when you're there, you will be fascinated by the depth of the culture, just so many aspects of their life. That's wonderful, I think, because in Western society, we're all fast, change. There's not really that many traditions. Holidays are kind of being blended and certain focuses are taken away. But the Japanese are not like that. They have got a real foundation. Then on top of that, they have a Shinto philosophy. And this is taught to them just really within the family. But they really do worship nature. They really do. They think everything has a life force in it, and it should be respected, especially the life that's found in nature. So their human relations between each other, their lack of not wanting to deface things, and everything, there is a respect for things that are living and not living. So with that philosophy, it's wonderful. And then the rhythm of nature, the seasons, I mean, in the Japanese gardens, all of them, they are conceived to be beautiful no matter the season. They love the different seasons. Mm. One particularly is the cherry blossom season, which most everybody knows about or have heard about. They call this season Sakura. Well, it's the beginning basically of spring, but they have festivals. They get together with friends and picnic in parks. They take photographs all over at different, photographing the cherry blossom trees and themselves in it. And, oh, they are just so excited and happy during Sakura. And I was so lucky. It was really fate. I mean, I knew I was going to be there. I was there at the end of March, early April. I knew I was going to be there probably sometime during cherry blossom season, and I was happy that I would probably see some. But I didn't specifically say, I want to go during cherry blossom season, which a lot of people do. But it's very hard to time because the flowers and the trees are very delicate and susceptible to a lot of things. So the temperature has to be just right. Can't be a lot of rain, wind, all this kind of stuff. Well, I was so lucky. I landed in Tokyo when it started, and I left Hiroshima when the blooms were on the ground. And I felt like this was some kind of spiritual good fortune that I had to be able to go during that season, because there is something very divine about it, and it's all about the nature and being in flow with nature. and not just wanting something to stay static. It's all in that subconscious belief system that they have.
When you told me that you captured the cherry blossom season perfectly, I just thought, well, there you go again. There's the Astrid serendipity. Her travel serendipity was working once again in your favor.
Well, the travel gods were with me, I can tell you. Because, like I said, my goal wasn't to go there right specifically.
Well, if you had tried, it wouldn't have happened. That's exactly, absolutely.
Yes, for sure. Then also fall. The next time I go back to Japan, I want to go in the fall. Because the fall is supposed to be glorious, too, with all the different changing of the leaves and the colors and everything. So it's beautiful. And the gardens just encapsulate all of that through the seasons. So the gardens, when you go, you have to go to as many gardens as you can, I would suggest. But away from that, Japan has gorgeous mountains. This country is just a mountainous. They have many more mountains than flat land. The mountains, the forests, the lakes, and the oceans, all of that plays into the energy that goes through this island. And it's beautiful to be in their forests and in the mountain areas. Take time to get into nature. Try to understand the Shinto philosophy because it will be very nurturing to you. As well as, I think it's life-changing. I felt it was. I learned a lot from this trip, as you're going to see in this broadcast, because I'm probably going to talk a whole lot. Okay, next is the fabulous food, which I have to tell you, I'm going to devote a whole podcast to Japanese food and eating in Japan, because there's so much to it. It's not just the taste of the food. It goes down to the basic construction of the concept of how you put things together, etc. And it's all based in their philosophy of life. It's really something. It's part of what makes the food so fabulous. It's very healthy, for starters. It is delicious. And one of the things that I love so much about it is you never felt stuffed or heavy or like I ate too much or, ugh. You don't get that feeling when you eat in Japan, even if you eat too much. You just don't feel like that. But you have sushi, ramen, kasaki, sukiyaki, saba noodle dishes, barbecue, tempura, yakitori, and all the matcha. I mean, that matcha, that bitter green, super healthy tea and tea leaves. They put this flavoring. Not only do you drink it green tea, and they drink it with every meal, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It's the bitter. They have to have something bitter. But they have a lot of matcha products that are sweet. It could be one of those roll cakes. They have a specific kind of roll cake. I forgot what it's called, but it has a cream filling in it. And it's not a runny cream. It's kind of a light cream or some type of milk product in it. The matcha flavor is absolutely to die for. But they also put in cookies, cake, sweets, food. So the food is extremely healthy. Health is one of the absolute foundations of what the Japanese want in their life. And they think about it a lot and they do things to keep themselves healthy. Okay, next reason to visit Japan is the modern cities. These cities are something else. Tokyo is basically like New York City. Doesn't quite have all the multiculturalism, but it has all the neighborhoods and it has the bright lights, people on the go, excitement. You can get everything from the low to the highest. The cities are full of just energy. As well as Japan is a technological leader in technology, in innovation, they got it going on. So there's a lot of emphasis on cool technology. You have huge arcades and shopping centers that are strictly devoted for technology. I mean, there's one shopping, a Pokemon shopping center, where they have everything in there, all kinds of electronics and everything. And I'm not a techno. I mean, you know, I'm a lot older, and I don't really like technology because it doesn't come naturally to me. I didn't grow up with it. But Japan, whew, it's fabulous. And then the anime and cosplay and all of that. So if you like technology, you can go to cafes that are served to you by a robot. They have robot entertainment. It's something else. So the cities are so modern and full of energy. Then the next thing, oh, this was something that really took me aback. Japan is extremely clean. Now, I've been to other Asian countries, and cleanliness is not that big of a deal, or they don't focus on it. Japan, hyper clean. For these cities to be so clean, but they are, there is no trash in the streets. They don't even have trash cans, and there are no trash in the streets. They don't have the trash cans. There was some kind of terrorist attack about 15, 20 years ago, and they decided to remove the trash cans because that's where the bombs were or something like that. So there's not very many trash cans. You might see one at convenience stores, and convenience stores are one of the it things in Japan, and they're not normal convenience stores. I mean, you can get all kinds of things at these convenience stores, and they do all kinds of convenient things for you. But they have the trash cans there. But what the Japanese do is they carry a little bag, or they have something that, just like if you have a dog and you have to pick up after your dogs, is use the bathroom, they keep it with them until they can dispose of it properly. So there's no throwing trash or gum or anything like that. You will not see it. Then before every meal, anywhere you eat, you'll either get a hot towel, a cold towel, or at least some wet wipes before you eat. It's just part of how the Japanese carry on. They don't just start eating, I can tell you that. They have the fanciest, most complicated, high-tech toilets in the world. Now, this will really tell you how clean they are. Their toilets will spritz, spray, blow dry. Some of them have music. Some of them have flushing sound, which I asked somebody, why would you want to push the flushing sound? Well, they said, it's so if you have to pass a little, you know, gas, nobody will hear you. Some of the real fancy ones have automatic lids, heated seats, deodorizers. I mean, you can just go have a fest in there. But what I'm trying to tell you, these people believe in cleanliness of all kinds. There's something about cleanliness is next to godliness. Really and truly, it is wonderful. So that's a reason to go to Japan. I mean, if you want to go to Asia and cleanliness is important to you, Japan's your place for sure. Okay, great transportation. Japan has got it really down pat. They definitely have the best trains in the world. Their trains, especially like the Shinkansen, the bullet train, they have lots of them. They are beautiful. They're well-maintained. They're on time to the second. They're not difficult to get the tickets or to use. And they're really affordable. A tip is, don't try to fly from one place to the other. Just take the bullet train, because the train stations are located centrally in every place. And so they have everything is just so well planned out. So you can go 5 minutes before your train is supposed to leave. I mean, you don't have to get there 2 hours ahead of time. There was no security going through any kind of patting you down the airport there was. But besides that, there's nothing like that in Japan. Because like I said, people don't break the law. And there's a lot of law enforcement that is out. So it might change one day, especially with a lot more tourism. I hope not. But their trains are great, as well as the subways. The subway system is really good. You're going to have to get used to the kanjis and all that kind of stuff, but it's easy to get from point A to point B with the subways, and they're inexpensive. The transportation network, and a lot of when you travel solo, your logistics are really important that you're able to navigate and that there's not a lot of hassle with it, because that's where a lot of hassle can arise. The next reason is if you like to shop, they have sophisticated fashions and shopping is great there. The Japanese are shoppers. They love to shop. One gentleman said, my wife shops every day. They are into shopping. They have all kinds of boutiques, huge department stores. I was shocked at that. And I thought, Amazon hadn't taken hold here? Obviously not, because they love to shop. But they're discriminating shoppers. They're just not buying junk. Quality is what they look for, even if it's inexpensive. So quality fabrics, quality stitching, quality electronics, and they think about what they want to buy. They're not just shopaholics. They're not. But they are really looking for the best quality at the lowest price. The shopping, what you're going to buy there, it's pretty well filtered by the society. And then the fashions are beautiful. If you like that modern, unstructured look, that's Japan. They have so much of that and beautiful. As well as you've got your unique Japanese items, which they're not really that many crafts and things you can buy. But the ones that are there, if you like it, it's really nice. I went to the textile center in Kyoto, and this is where originally they did a lot of the weaving for the beautiful fabrics for the kimono, and they still do weave fabrics there, but it's a wonderful place to go. They have a kimono style show. They have a museum there. You can watch them weave, and then they have the most wonderful gift shop there that you can buy everything. I mean, that's where you should buy your souvenirs because all of the merchandise in there is really fine. And it's all price ranges, but quality. And that's nice. You don't have to be worried that it's all cheap junk or knockoffs or anything like that. I mean, the knockoff thing is not a deal in Japan. I guess it just goes with their whole, they wouldn't want to represent themselves as something that they're not. The ninth reason why you should go to Japan is the Japanese value relaxation. And there's one custom that they have, which is called taking an onsen or taking a soak in a pool of water, which is either hot and it's natural or it's piped in. But what they do, this is a bathing ritual that is done at night, and it's either communal or can be private. Basically, you go in, you shower, you get in the bath, stay in there as long as you want. It's nice hot water. And then when you're through, you get out, you take another shower, wash your hair, whatever. You just feel so relaxed. They do it all the time. Every hotel that I went in had an onsen. A couple of them had interior onsens and an onsen on the outside where you could soak and look at the stars. That's how much they're into nature. They really do believe in this relaxation and to decompress. This is an old tradition. I know when I went to Hakone, which is in the mountains where Mount Fuji is, I stayed in what's called a ryokan, which is an old traditional kind of hotel. It's like a series of bungalows, and they were all situated in a beautiful garden. And one of the amenities was a private onsen where they had sulfur water, hot natural water from the mountains piped in to this beautiful freestanding structure that they got all ready for you. You could go and do everything privately. Then when you're through, they come and bring you tea, and you can go outside and sit in the garden. Beautiful, really beautiful. It is something that is part of their tradition, and it's a reason to go. Because I think it's part of some of the reason why Japan is so fabulous. Because these people take care of themselves. You'll want to do an onsen. Now, you do have to completely disrobe. So if you don't like doing that, then maybe you won't do it. But do it. That's my suggestion. Okay. Nobody's looking.
Get brave anyway. Get brave.
No, these people, that doesn't cross. I mean, you know, maybe some cross their mind, but
That's not the point of this.
You won't feel like you're competing or you look bad or saying it everywhere or what. None of that. That won't even cross your mind. Then, of course, you got your major sites. Mount Fuji, that was bucket list for me. And I tell you, when I saw it, oh, it was a magic moment, to tell you the truth. Because it's kind of hard to see a lot of times. And I went in the area, and the day before, I took this cable car. And this was supposed to be, you could really see it. Well, it was foggy, couldn't see it. And there's a lot of fog that comes in and the clouds. And there are only certain angles in the mountains that you can see it. Some of them are just a little bit, and some of them are, it's just there like a picture. So I went to this small village, and it was sunny. And I heard people say, oh, we're going to be able to see Mount Fuji. So I asked somebody, where exactly is the best place to see Mount Fuji? And they told me this one museum that you had to kind of go up the hill. So I went there, and I went through the museum, and they had like a little cafe. And I went on the porch, and I saw, it was everything that people talk about. It is glorious. So I saw it there. Then I went outside. I went by the lake because it's right on this lake. And I took some more pictures. I got some great pictures. But that was the only time, except when I was going back from Hiroshima to Tokyo to catch my flight home on the bullet train. And I didn't even think about it. I turned to look, and I went, oh, there's Mount Fuji. I caught my phone. I snapped some more pictures. It was just gorgeous. So it's kind of like a fleeting thing. You can't really just see it. Oh, so Mount Fuji is one of the reasons to go. It really is, because it strikes everybody that way. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody goes, oh, well, I saw it, been there, done that. There's something about it, like the pyramids or something. Okay, next thing is Nara. Nara is ancient. This is really where the imperial period started. And they have the Todaiji. And please excuse me when I mispronounce things. But this humongous temple. And when I say humongous, it is the largest all-wood temple in the world. It is so powerful. This is Japan. When you go in this, and it's nestled in this forest, and they have other temples and shrines, but they have free roaming deer there. And in Japan, the deer is kind of a sacred animal. So they're free roaming in the park, and you get to feed them and everything. It's a little touristy, but you need to go to Nara. And that's typically like a day trip from Tokyo, because it is something to see. It kind of roots you in how it all got started. And you'll see how different their architecture is from what you see in China and Vietnam. So also Kyoto. You have to go to Kyoto. Go to the Gion district where the tea houses and the geishas are. See if you can spot a geisha or a maiko. You know, go have a traditional Japanese kaseki dinner. Maybe have a geisha performance. You have to go through there. And there's a beautiful temple and shrines around that area. I kind of likened it to the French Quarter of New Orleans. It's very traditional in there. But it's old Japan, and you should go. That's one of the reasons why you go to Kyoto, is to go to this district. The other place that I think is a must-do is the Arashiyama Bamboo Forest. Now, this is kind of outside Kyoto, but this forest, these bamboo trees are so tall. They look like they're mile high, and they're super thick. It's super old. There are a lot of people there, unfortunately, and there are other gardens and temples and shrines in there and paths you can walk. But this forest, it's a one of a kind. So you definitely want to go there. The next thing is the Fushimi Inari Shrine. This is where they have all those hundreds of red gates that people walk through. And the Japanese believe when you walk through the gates, you enter hallowed ground, and that it's a blessing for you. So it's all these gates that these people have paid for and created as an offering for blessings. Mm. You have to see it. It's best to go really early in the morning or kind of when it's getting ready to close, so a lot of people aren't there, so you can get some good photos. But it is beautiful. It has a mystique to it. You talk like, oh, well, you're going to get a blessing. But it really does have a mystique to it. The next one is, in my opinion, Hiroshima. I really enjoyed going to Hiroshima with the Peace Park. They have a museum. They have monuments. There was a girl that made all these paper origami cranes to symbolize peace. And she became kind of iconic. And they have all these origami cranes in a certain area, and they have a statue of her. And it really is focused on peace. And you can ring a big bell that's a peace bell and do your own prayer and all of that, of which I did it all, because that's really kind of what I went to Hiroshima to do, was to pay my respects, because these people were just incinerated because the powers that be were mad at each other. It's just so ridiculous, in my opinion. But for some reason, sometimes they just cannot help themselves or work it out. But that was great. And then that garden that I told you about, it's called Shukien Garden. It is a must. It's a must to go to. And it's odd that this fabulous garden is in Hiroshima, where they dropped the bomb that incinerated basically the town, that this garden now is so fantastic. That kind of gives you an idea of what Japan's all about.
Well, the symbolism alone there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then Osaka. Well, it has the Osaka Castle. That's what one of the big things I went to. And it's beautiful gardens around it and a temple. It's very beautiful. Now, it's not so fine in the inside, but it's a beautiful structure and how it's situated. And, really, Osaka, you should go. I didn't spend quite as much time, because it's very modern. Osaka was highly bombed, so it's kind of like a new city. And Tokyo was my main focus. But you need to go to Osaka. And if you're a foodie, Osaka is a foodie paradise, because they are really into all of this contemporary Japanese cuisine. And it's really lively. It's a beautiful city. The architecture is fabulous there. And then in Tokyo, you have to go to the Senzoji Temple. It's another one like the Nara Temple. So those are, to me, the must-see sites. Now, the last reason, and I know this is a long answer, Catherine, but the last reason you should visit Japan is to interact with the people. The Japanese are so warm. They're very generous. They're extremely helpful. Even though they're shy, if they see you're just kind of like befuddled or whatever, they'll come up and they'll try to communicate with you. There's a real bad language barrier in Japan. The Japanese really don't speak other languages, but they will try to help you. And I just found that so special. It's part of their culture. They help each other. They don't want a bunch of fussing and fighting or somebody, because it drags them all down. This is ingrained in them when they're young. Also, they're highly focused and disciplined. They are something. But even with this super focused, disciplined mindset they have, it's very important that they stay calm and relaxed. Their demeanor cannot look harried. There's no showing panic attacks. Nothing. That doesn't come to the surface. And maybe it's going on deep down inside, but I didn't see it. Another thing about these people, they are not loud. You do not hear any yelling or even loud talking, because they value being quiet. They have smartphone rules. Do not keep the sound on when you're in public. And if you have to talk on it, speak softly. They do not like it. So you're not going to see all these people on their cell phones. Even though Japan is so high tech, they like quiet and calmness. So they're not revved up with the cell phone, and they're not fussing and fighting. Also, they line up so civilly. They have to line up for the trains, the subways, restaurants. Lots of things create lines. Well, they are the best people I've ever seen that line up. They usually have designated places that are marked on, say, the concrete where you line up. They calmly line up and wait. There's no breaking in line. There's no pushing. There's nobody saving somebody's place. That just tells you there, these people are so civil. They're just naturally civil. Next is they focus on happiness. I didn't really realize that before I went, but they pray for happiness. They pray for other people's happiness. They love cute characters that look happy. They even have a word in Japan called kawaii or cuteness, which they have whole fashion statements with cute clothes and cute characters and cute that are happy. Happiness is one of the basic tenets. One other thought. What really impressed me about the Japanese is they don't really practice any formal religion. And I shouldn't say it impressed me, but this is a fact. But their beliefs are passed down to them from their families. And I kept saying, how can a society be so civil, so clean, so processed, that's not firmly rooted in religion? It was a shock to me. But then as the more I traveled, the more I thought about it, it's this Zen mindset that they also learn from their family, and they're kind of just socialized, is they center themselves first, or they find their own truth. And they do this daily, and they reflect on it. Then they adjust their life into what they have to accomplish, their goals, their must-dos, etc., without creating what I call negativity or me, me, me. They are just genius at this. Really, I really was so surprised, but they really do believe you reap what you sow. I'll never forget, we were touring one garden and this gentleman was pointing to this frog statue or some type of statue. I think it was a frog. And he said that was a symbol or a message for people to heed. What goes around comes around. And they really believe that. It all started to make more sense to me. As you know, these people come up and give you help that you're not soliciting in a very mannerly way. But they know in the future they will need help. So they hope that a stranger would help them. So it's these unattached moments of kindness that is just part of their moral code. They don't think about it. They just do it. It was just such an eye-opener, and it gave me so much hope for the world that people can do the right thing. And even if you have a lot of problems and there's a lot of challenges, it starts in to thine own self be true, in that centering of yourself and certain values. They have such a positive flow of life, and they're real big about the flow and keeping things in balance and practice this, whether it's within the family or the community at work. They don't believe, like I said, in harming others. The food, like I said, has to be balanced. Earth and sea, they use the chopsticks, and there's a flow to that. And I really, after a couple of weeks of me not using chopsticks very artfully or skillfully, I said, these people have a flow because they don't eat in 5 minutes, 10 minutes. They have to sit there, use the chopsticks, and slow down, and they savor the food. And it's part of the whole flow, as well as they have such gratitude for what they're eating. They even say gratitude to the chef or the server where they're eating. I mean, we might say, oh, that was a delicious meal or thank you or whatever. But this is routine everywhere they go. Then also this positive flow, like I told you about, this seeking refuge into nature regularly. And they do it. This is like going to church, basically. Not constantly on their smartphone. They're busy, but they don't seem to be rushed. That was another thing. I can't believe they're not exuding any stress. They focus on excellence. Everything they do or create, they want it to be perfect. To have a personality like that and not exude stress at all, they just don't. They just figure out how to get that positive flow going, and they reach an extremely high level of quality in what they're doing. I kind of summed it up like regular relaxation is a part of their daily lives, the onsen. They take the time to center themselves, find their own truth through meditation. They do the tea ceremonies. They stop by temples after work to have some quiet time. All this positive, good thoughts and actions, I found Japan to be so refreshing and inspiring. And I must say, traveling to Japan did change me. And now I'm trying to be more relaxed and positive and have a positive flow about the things in my life, which is hard for somebody who grew up in Western civilizations. But you don't have to overstress or be stressed out. And I know I'm going to get pushback for saying that, but I mean, I saw it in Japan. You can get the job done. You can go where you want to do, et cetera, and not burn yourself out, because I didn't see evidence of it. Maybe it's there in the society, but it's not there on the surface, I can share. But they really focus on being balanced. So I really took that as a message for me in my life, because I'm one of these people, oh, plan your work your plan, stay focused. And I do have a lot of energy, but there is a balance of rest and doing that is part of nature. And the Japanese don't let themselves basically get out of balance, and they are able to achieve excellence. So it can be done. Last thing, this is really the last thing, and the question will be answered. The Japanese focus on happiness, good fortune, and good health. These are the three basic tenets for a good life, and they go to the temples to pray for it. They want it for themselves. They want it for others. They think about it. And those three, happiness, good fortune, and good health. That is so basic, but so exactly spot on. So Japan, to me, is a must-see place for all travelers seeking enlightenment. And also, you will have a good time. But it's a country that is unique to itself. So those are my reasons, Catherine. The answer was long, but I wanted to paint the picture of key things that I thought would make you go to Japan that people don't realize.
Well, Astra, I really think that the listeners are getting a sense of your passion for this trip. And I'll share with our listeners that when you and I met up after you came home from Japan, I physically could see a difference in you. I've seen you come back from other countries and other trips, but there really was something I noticed going on with you after this trip.
I can't describe it, but it really was life-changing. It was a growth for me. I saw myself more clearly, good and bad. I thought that was so great for me to see that. I think it's going to help me in everything that I do in the community, with what I'm doing with this passion, Astrid Solo Travel Advisor, with my family, with everything. And it's not just what I learned, it's what I also took in totally by osmosis. So thank you. Maybe it did show.
Well, you used the phrase, you were peeling back the layers of the onion. And I think that that's really kind of coming through here.
I'm a thinker. I always search for the truth. That's probably one of my biggest passions is I'm a truth seeker. So I ask a lot of questions. I'm curious. When my old beliefs or certain things are tested, I allow myself to be open. I want to really get to what I feel like I am comfortable with. So Japan expanded me a lot in my own interior. I didn't expect it. It was a blessing.
Well, Astrid, all of that sounds just absolutely wonderful. I don't know anybody who could listen to this and not want to go to Japan. I mean, you've really hooked me on the idea of going to Japan. Since this is, we're back, baby, like I said before. So exciting to be talking to our listeners here. Can you tell everybody, what are we going to be doing here? Give everybody a sense of what Solo Travel Talk is going to be doing for the next few weeks.
Okay. I shared at the beginning, Solo Travel Talk is not going to be aired like it was before every Thursday on a weekly basis. We're going to a seasonal format or scheduling. And what I'll be doing is I'll focus on one area of solo travel and have a more in-depth informational format. This season's topic is, you guessed it, Japan. So the next 6 to maybe even 10 broadcasts, I'll be giving listeners a lot of interesting information about Japan travel, its culture. I mean, there's a lot more to it. I just skipped the surface. But some of the upcoming topics will be food and eating in Japan. So that's going to really be a good one, I think. Cultural do's and don'ts. Oh, there are many of these that you can't even believe. There's so many unique things to Japan. Then traveling Japan for a spiritual or personal recharge. Getting into a lot deeper about some of the spirituality and the people, etc. I have a lot more to say about that that won't get boring or kind of too much. Then 10 must-dos when traveling to Japan. Things that I really think you should. I touched on a lot of them, but I want to go into why. I went a little bit overboard on Mount Fuji, but all of them have something very magical or very different about them. Also experiencing nature in Japan, the gardens of Japan. Oh, that is so interesting and so much a part of really experiencing Japan. So I think that'll be a really good informative broadcast. And best times to travel in Japan and why. I'm going to go into more about Sakura in the fall. And the Japanese don't feel like there's any best time. They're all good times. But there are certain things that if you like this kind of thing, you should go during that time. Besides a change in the broadcasting, like from a weekly airing to a seasonal format, Solo Travel Talk broadcasts are really going to go forward with sharing more information on how to do things and travel tips to specific locations, and really a lot more emphasis on problem solving and tips, etc. Because we, Catherine and I, have found that those are the shows that have that format that our audience really is most interested in. Keep listening because we're up in our game.
So Astrid, with the how-tos, we know that from the feedback from our audience that there are some people who come to us for specific destinations that they want information about. We also get listeners who enjoy the travelogue. And I would say I fall into that category. So some of these places I just love hearing about. It's like you've taken me on an adventure to hear about all these places that you've got to visit. But of course, there are people, as you mentioned, that they really are looking for that how-to aspect from our shows. And we really have a plan to build in how-tos from here on out. So obviously, Astrid just did an amazing job of putting Japan on your must-see list. But even if Japan isn't necessarily your bag, we are going to incorporate information to make you a better solo traveler, to give you a little bit more tools in your toolbox.
Definitely, definitely. So even if it's not totally like a how-to broadcast, it's a travelogue, we're going to have some how-to information in it. So it's not just Astrid went tripping on to, you know, so and so.
I am going to ask Astrid some direct questions about how to for any destination, any travel. You'll be hearing that in every show.
I'd like to close by thanking all the listeners for tuning back in. If you've benefited from this podcast, any of the information, give us a thumbs up or a like or a share. Also, if you have any comments or questions, we really do read all the comments and answer the questions. And it's really very helpful to us because that helps us with our programming and how we create the programs, what you want to hear, et cetera, or what we didn't cover that we should have covered. Yeah. And then the last, as they say in podcast land all the time, is subscribe to Solo Travel Talk. Because when you do, that gives other listeners or international travelers who would be interested in our type of information the opportunity to be able to tune into our broadcast. Because the more you subscribe, the more it's pushed out. So with that said, thanks for listening.
That's right, everybody. You can subscribe to Solo Travel Talk on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify. We love Spotify. Really, any of the fine places that podcasts can be found. You can also go to astridtravel.com and get all of the episodes there. By the way, if you are not following Astrid on social media, you really missed out because that was one of the joys is seeing all these amazing pictures from her Japan trip. Holy
smokes. And I still have over 3,000 more that I can pick out highlights. Yeah, I had to pull back because I didn't want to overload the world with my photos. It's a beautiful place to take photographs. And I take a couple of everything that I want to photograph because I'm trying to get better with my photography skills. But I took some photos that I think will also give you a real good sense of what you'll experience in Japan.
Well, how cool. When we put out the episodes, then we'll be able to revisit some of those pictures. So that'll be really nice. We really do thank everybody for listening to Solo Travel Talk. We loved people reaching out to us when we were on hiatus. It really was a very nice, warm feeling that we know that we're connecting with you and we missed you. So thank you so much for listening this week. We'll see you next time on Solo Travel Talk.
Find Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. All things Astrid, including the Astrid Travel Club and this podcast, are available at astridtravel.com. Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk.